Last Lord's Day, I brought you a message from the 30th chapter of this book as we have been continuing in our study in the life of Hezekiah and what he did under God. And what was very practical last week was the fact of Hezekiah's unprecedented invitation that he had given that had never been done from the days of Solomon up to this time, to make an invitation to all Israel and Judah that they should now come to Jerusalem to worship. That had not happened from the days of Rehoboam and Jeroboam, because Jeroboam, the king of the northern tribes, he set up his own altar in Samaria. He did not want the people to return to Jerusalem, fearing that if they did, they would make their allegiance back to the king of Judah. So he set up, and get this, a golden calf in Samaria. And he set up the very thing that the people had done after they had come out of Egypt, for which Moses had ground to powder, strewn it on the waters, and made all the people drink of that very altar that they had made back in those days. But it's repeated again. Is it any wonder? The people of God, we are often in dire circumstances because we do not learn from history. We do not learn from the mistakes that have been made by other generations. We don't learn by our own mistakes very often that we have made. But as Hezekiah progressed in what he was attempting to do in the Passover celebration he wanted to hold, there were some difficulties. And the problem was that the priests had not properly sanctified themselves at that time, and people had come from outside of Jerusalem themselves, and they weren't properly ready for this feast, so they had to put it off for 1 month. And the Lord had made provision for this, the second month, the 14th day of the month. But there was a God-blessed unity at that time. God gave them one heart, and the people were united in their obedience. But they were uncompromising in their stand, and they had assembled in the one place, the place of the sacrifice, and what a unity they enjoyed. The outcome of obedience to God's way was seen in this. There was great gladness in the hearts of His people. There was great praise, and they were happy because there was faithful preaching of the word, and Hezekiah taught them the good knowledge of the Lord. And so all these people gathered together around this feast of the Passover that had not been remembered for many, many years in such a way, and had not been done from the days of Solomon to the degree that Hezekiah was able to enact it. There was great praise, and there was a very generous response. There was great rejoicing. And do you know what was significant about that time? The people were brought back to the importance of prayer. They were brought back to a united prayer. The 27th verse of that chapter will indicate for us. But now tonight, as we progress into the 31st chapter, you will notice there is an ongoing aspect to this Reformation work. It did not happen quickly from the standpoint that, yes, Hezekiah enacted it quickly, but there were a lot of things that had to be accomplished. There were many hurdles that had to be overcome. You see, sometimes we think that we're going to see the Lord's work done in our life very speedily. And when things get difficult, when we come to hurdles, we get tired. We get discouraged. We don't want to go on. We don't want to come and really roll up our sleeves and get busy in the work. And I would like, please, for you to think with me tonight about the importance of the ongoing reformation that is needful in all our lives. The ongoing work. Because once the Lord has done a thing in us, once He has brought us back to the foundation principles, let us not rest there. Let's not stop there. But let's say, oh God, take us onward with the Lord and upward with God. Because I don't want to stay in the place of blessing where I was last year or even last month. I want to progress on. I want to go farther up with God. I want to come to closer fellowship and communion with Him. And if that's your desire of heart tonight, then the Lord will answer that prayer for you. And this ongoing work of reformation, that's what this chapter is all about. Chapter 31. I point out to you, first of all, the continuity of time. It says in the first verse, "Now when all this was finished." When all this was finished. What he is talking about is the sacrifice, the feast of the Passover, that time of remembering and reestablishing what God had called to be done. Now when all this was finished. And I suggest to you that when something has happened in your life of God's working in you, you can perhaps mark a time when something significant has been done. It's never a time to stop there. Now, when all this was finished, the verse 1 will tell us, all Israel that were present, they went out to the cities of Judah. My, what a story there is there of the activity that the people were engaged in. They weren't prepared to sit back and do nothing. No, now is a time for activity and action. And so they went out. And what did they go out to do? They went out to continue the work of destroying and taking away the things that were hindering to the true and accurate worship of the God of heaven. They went out to remove all the vestiges of idolatry that had been remaining from the days of Ahaz, the father of Hezekiah. It just goes on to show me as well, reminds me of how pervasive the work that Ahaz had been doing. He had set up these idols in every city of Judah. He was a busy man. And these statues, these idols, these groves, these high places, they were something that needed to be targeted. Is there a deeper work that has to be done in our lives? Is there something more that perhaps the Spirit of God will be putting His finger on in your life? You see, as these people went about to serve the Lord, their heart was open. Their heart was wanting to be instructed in the obedient ways of the Lord. And so they went to break down the images. But do you see what it says there? They broke them in pieces. So it wasn't going to be just a matter of them being pushed over and so that someone later could raise them up again. No, they were not going to be raised up again. They were going to be dealt with in such a manner, broken in pieces. You know, friends, that's what has to be done in our lives. Of the vestiges of the old nature. The vestiges of the old man. The things of the world that have crowded in that perhaps we have allowed or tolerated in our life. They need to be dealt with. And they need to be dealt with once and for all. Now it also says that they cut down the groves. The groves were places where things or trees grew up. And those trees were significant to do with idol worship and the worship of other gods. And so they were going in to cut down those groves, those orchard places that were reminding any remembrance of idolatry. And then the final part of this was that they threw down the high places and the altars. I want you to notice the significance of this because during the times of other kings before Hezekiah that had done some stages of reformation work. They oftentimes, it's recorded in about them, that they would break images or that they would deal with the groves. But it says they did not deal with the high places. In fact, Hezekiah is one of the only kings, if my memory serves me correctly, that is the man who did this complete reformation among the people of Israel and Judah at this time. They then moved not just to the cities of Judah, but they went farther than that throughout all Judah. Benjamin, you notice what it says in verse number 1. Into Ephraim also and Manasseh. Ephraim and Manasseh. When in chapter 30 the letters had been taken out by the post to go to Ephraim and Manasseh, representative of the large tribes, Ephraim is sometimes put for all of Israel. They were very prominent tribes by their size and their strength. Many of them rejected the message that Hezekiah had sent to them, but there were those who had come. But this reformation work now has gone out into those very tribes, the cities that those people were involved with, because it was a great work that God had done through them, until it says they had utterly destroyed all. Everything was taken care of. My, this work, my friends, it was a very needy work. It had to be done. But it was also a very thorough work. And it was a God-honoring work. When God does something deep in our lives, a deep spiritual moving, a reviving, there will be changes that affect the way we live. There will be changes that affect the things that we tolerate in our life. I was speaking to a man this past week, Dr. Ralph Colas from the American Council of Christian Churches. We were having a chat on the phone, and he mentioned something just in passing, and it really stuck in my mind. He said, it's not what people do that is so much the problem in a church context. It's not so much what people do, it's what they tolerate. It's not what they do, but it's what they tolerate. It's what we become accustomed to. It's what we allow to continue. And that's where the difficulty of compromise will begin to set in, either in our lives or in a church setting. That's where the downgrade will begin. And it only opens the door to greater compromise down the road. Friends, let us be careful. Therefore, what we tolerate in our lives. You see, previous kings had not dealt with those high places the way they should have. They tolerated the existence of them. And what happened? Well, it only opened the door or left it ajar for the return to that type of abuse and idolatry again. Would you please notice, secondly, with me, the continuation of this important work from verses 2 to 4. It says, and Hezekiah appointed the courses of the priests and the Levites after their courses, every man according to his service, the priests and the Levites for burnt offerings and for peace offerings, to minister, to give thanks, and to praise in the gates of the tents of the Lord. There was no slacking off here. There was no one or no time for anyone to say, well, I'm glad that work has now been finished. We'll just dust our hands off and go back and sit down. No, there was yet a work that had to be done. So there's no time for slacking off. Look what it says in verse 3. And he appointed also the king's portion of his substance for the burnt offerings, to wit, for the morning and evening sacrifice or burnt offerings, and the burnt offerings for the Sabbaths and the new moons, and for the set feasts, as it is written in the law of the Lord. Moreover, he commanded the people that dwelt in Jerusalem to give a portion of the priests and the Levites, that they might be encouraged in the law of the Lord. There was something for every man to do in his service. Something for every man to do. They were to minister, they were to give thanks, and they were to praise or to sing unto the Lord. That's what it tells us in the second verse. What is it to minister? It simply means to serve. What is it to give thanks? That is both in prayer, or we could say to supplicate before the Lord, the throne of grace. And to praise is to sing. And so these people, they continued, no slacking off. There was enough work for every man to do. There was a task for all. No one was left out, my friend. You see, in Lord's work, we can sometimes think that someone else will do the job. Maybe it's a job for the pastor or the deacon or the elder. It's a job for the Sunday school teacher. It's a job for someone else to do, but I don't have any talents, or I'm in a position where it's not expected of me to do something in the Lord's work. No, friend, don't think that way at all. There is enough for every man to do according to his service. What would the Lord have you to do? How would he have you to be engaged in the Lord's work? I draw from this that there is personal responsibility. Each one of us accountable before God. There was a very clear pattern that the king had set out. Hezekiah had given them directions. And we are, though, not going by the pattern of King Hezekiah. We're going by the pattern of the great king, our King of Kings and Lord of Lords. And we need to follow the pattern that he has set for us as his children to follow in his way. And there was very plain teaching of the Word of God. For it tells us, as it is written in the end of verse 3, as it is written in the law of the Lord. It's really crystal clear, you know. There really are not things that are that hard to understand as far as the things the Lord wants us to do, what he expects us to do, and the path we are to go in. He draws the lessons very clearly. And in verse 4, it tells us of the responsibility that the people had to come to give the portion to the priests and the Levites. And the lesson we draw from that is that when we come to our responsibility, look what it does to the servants of the Lord at the end of verse 4. It says that they might be encouraged in the law of the Lord. Do you see, when the people in the congregation are engaged, they're involved, they're coming to do what they can do, who is receiving the encouragement? Well, you yourself will be, that's for certain. But the people of God, the servants of the Lord, they will be encouraged to go on, to serve with more energy, and not to be discouraged. You have an important part to play. Don't neglect the work that the Lord calls you to do. Well, let's move on thirdly, please, to the cooperation of the people in verse 5. It says, and as soon as the commandment came abroad, the children of Israel brought in abundance the first fruits of corn, wine, and oil, and honey, and of all the increase of the field, and the tithe of all things brought they in abundantly. The cooperation of the people. There was an immediate response to the word that came from the king, from that word, as soon as the commandment came. Are you vigilant and diligent about doing the Lord's work urgently? Or is there a laid back sort of an attitude about, well, we'll give that time. It can be done later. We'll just put that thing off. No, my friends, the work of the Lord requires that we are immediate in our response to the Lord's command. He doesn't want us to tarry. He wants us to be engaged, to do accurately and immediately. So not only was there an immediate response, but they were generous in their response because they brought in abundantly of the first fruits of all the increase of the field. This had not been done for a long, long time. In the economy that God has set up, He intends that the people are to bring in the tithes and the increase of the field into the temple for the service of the temple of the Lord, for the support of the Levites and the priests, that they might carry on for themselves and their families the work of God. I'd like you to turn for a moment with me, please, to Proverbs chapter 3. Proverbs chapter 3. Verses 9 and 10. Honor the Lord with thy substance, and with the first fruits of all thine increase, so shall thy barns be filled with plenty, and thy presses shall burst out with new wine. This word is a promise to God's people regarding the giving of the Lord, giving to the Lord of that which we have received and of the first fruits. The first fruits, or the time of the ingathering, it was one of the feasts that the Lord had given to His people at the harvest time. When they brought in the harvest, they were required by the Lord's command to give to Him of the in the first place. And so, friends, the application for you and me in this is that in our giving and our tithing to the Lord, He expects us to give unto Him of the first fruits of our increase. He does not expect us to give to the Lord second or third hand down the road. He does not expect us to give after we have paid all our bills, and if there's anything left over, then we give to Him. That's not the spirit and the command of tithing. If you tithe unto the Lord of the first fruits of your increase, He has promised a blessing for you and your family. And Proverbs 3 verse 11 says it very clearly. When you bring in the first fruits, so shall thy barns be filled with plenty. He will give you pressed down, shaken together, and running over. And it's not my word. If you have a problem or an issue with this idea of tithing, and you're struggling with it, bring that struggle to the Lord and to the promise of His word, and see what He will do for you. Friends, you miss out on a large blessing if you are not tithing properly unto Him. We draw near to the end of the year now, and it's sometimes a time of accounting. It would be wise for you to do the accounting of your own books and your own records. Have you given to the Lord sufficiently? Have you given as He has laid upon your heart? Come and give unto Him that which is due and right, because as these people here, in their generosity and cooperation, they were to bring in the tithes and the offerings. I might say to you tonight that God does not need anything from you. He doesn't need anything from me. He doesn't need my measly tithes to support His work or to make the work of God go on. He can well do His work apart from us and apart from what we give to Him. But He allows us the benefit and blessing of being involved in supporting His work. He allows us the benefit of giving. And not only that, He said, if you do that, I will then bless you on top of everything else. Yes, my friends, let us not be stingy with the Lord. But let us follow the example, because in the case of these people, what had followed? They had been in the presence of God. They had been in the time of the Passover feast, and there was rejoicing and singing. And then spontaneously from that was brought the giving unto God's work. If you're in blessing, you will give. If you're not in blessing with the Lord, if you're not walking in close fellowship with Him, it's most unlikely that your wallet will open. It's most unlikely that you'll be moved to give unto God's work. But I'll tell you that if you do that, you will be blessed in your own heart, and something else will happen. In verse 6, we find that the giving was contagious. It spread to other people. Verse 6, it says, "And concerning the children of Israel and Judah that dwell in the cities of Judah, they also brought in the tithe of oxen and sheep, and the tithe of the holy things that were consecrated unto the Lord their God, and they laid them by heaps." They began to bring in. And so as the one section of the Lord's people tithed and brought in, what did that do? It encouraged other people also to bring in. And you know all of this? It was the result of God's blessing upon an obedient people. Look at verse 10. "And Azariah, the chief priest of the house of Zadok, answered him and said, 'Since the people began to bring the offerings into the house of the Lord, we have had enough to eat and have left plenty. For the Lord hath blessed His people, and that which is left is this great store.'" And what did that do? My friends, this collection of the tithes and offerings, this bringing in of this thing, it did a great thing because it encouraged others. And from verse 11 down to verse 19 of the chapter, we find something of the collection and the organization of these tithes and offerings. And what happened was this. Hezekiah commanded that chambers be made in the temple to keep and to lay up the tithes that had been brought in. And you will notice in verse number 12, it says this, "And they brought in the offerings and the tithes and the dedicated things." And then that word, faithfully. They brought them in faithfully. And there was a man, Conaniah, a Levite, who was set over the charge of all this work. They brought it in faithfully. Why does the Lord put that in there? Because not only had the people brought their tithes in faithfully, and not only was there a contagion in this thing, other people began to bring in faithfully, but those who were handling the tithe, those who had the job of moving it from point A to point B, their hand was not in there. They were not taking that which belonged to the Lord. Friend, be very careful that you are dealing with the Lord's things faithfully. I would be very cautious to you if you are spending money, the Lord's money that should be given to tithe, on something else. Are you handling the Lord's things faithfully? And what of those people who steal the tithe of the Lord? What of those people who put their hand in and take that which belongs to God for themselves? How will God deal with them? Will there be blessing upon that life? There will be a day, an awful day of accounting, my friend, and of reckoning. Not just of keeping back the tithe. But could you imagine if Conaniah, the man who'd been set in charge, the Levite, over setting out this thing, if he was taking a little bit extra for himself and putting it in his own tent? What would have been for that man? For he was in a place where he had occasion to deal corruptly with the Lord's things. But here he was a man of honor. And the people who were handling these things, they dealt faithfully with them. And so, friends, let us be very careful that when we're dealing with the Lord's things, with the Lord's tithe, with the Lord's money, that we do so not in an unjust manner. And woe unto them that would steal or take that which belongs unto God. I draw your attention to the 18th verse. It says, and to the genealogy of all their little ones, their wives and their sons and their daughters, through all the congregation, for in their set office, they sanctified themselves in holiness. If we had time tonight to read through these verses from 13 on down to the 18th verse, you would find that it goes in detail to deal with the Levites and those who were set in charge and the responsibility of handling the tithes, and of all the families of the Levites that were living outside Jerusalem, they also had to receive their portion. That's how the Lord had made it. And as they came, they received supply and benefit, and it was for their children. It was for their wives, their family. And as they were in blessing, it says this very precious part, that they sanctified themselves in holiness. You see, the work was spreading. The work of holiness was spreading out farther and wider. And it was because of the faithfulness of some. And it went to the next one that was there. Then we come down finally tonight to this man Hezekiah and the summary that is given of him in verses 20 and 21, our conclusion. The action of this man before the Lord, it says, and thus did Hezekiah throughout all Judah. And he wrought that which was good and right and truth before the Lord his God. What a summary of the life of a man of God. That the Lord is going to take and write this of the man. That sums up what he did in this reviving and reformation work. He did that which was good. He was a man who loved that which was righteous. And he loved that which was truthful. And he was fully committed and engaged in this action for God. He was a man who loved the Lord, who loved his word, and who loved to do what was right. And his approach to the work of God we find in the 22nd verse. And in every work that he began in the service of the house of God, and in the law, and in the commandments, to seek his God, he did it with all his heart, and he prospered. And if you apply yourselves in the same way that Hezekiah did to the Lord's house, to the Lord's things, to the Lord's word, to the Lord's commandment, and to seek God with all your heart, you too will prosper, and God's blessing will be upon you. There is no doubt about that. And the Lord has made this writing here for us. So what do we conclude from that tonight? What do we need to do in our Christian experience and walk? We need to plan and purpose to go on with God. Nothing hindering, nothing stopping. We will plan and purpose by the grace of God to go on with the Lord and to live our life out and out for Him. That we will persevere for the cause of Christ. We will prosper as we follow in that way. Prosperity as God gives it to us. Will it mean necessarily riches? No, my friend, but it will mean that your supply will be met. It means, as the Lord says in the New Testament, my God shall supply all your need according to his riches in glory by Christ Jesus. He has promised to supply your need. And it's according to Christ's riches. It's not out of them. The Lord is never diminished by his giving to us. Christ is not diminished by his giving to us. No, it's according to his riches. Friend, as you follow on with him, you will find the Lord is no man's debtor. You honor him, he will honor you. And there will be the evidence of this ongoing work of reformation and of revival in each of our lives. And we pray that that will be the outcome. Let's take our hymnal now tonight, please, and we'll close our service with number 538. Hymn number 538. Friends, if there are any who are not able to remain with us tonight around the Lord's table, and I just emphasize to you again, you do not have to be a member of this congregation to fellowship with us around the Lord's table. It is His table. And if you are walking with Him, if you're not under the discipline of any other congregation, then we certainly welcome you to a fellowship with us here tonight. But if you're not able to stay, we'll give you an opportunity after the singing of the first verse that you're able to leave. I would ask one of the deacons just to go to the door tonight at the outside to shake anyone's hand who has to leave the service. We'll stand, please, and sing number 538.